I'm going to call the Natural Resources Subcommittee for Ways and Means together, and we are going to do Senate Bill, look at Senate Bills 5502 and 5503, continuing that hearing, a public hearing on that. So if we have folks from the Department of Agriculture who want to come forward again, that would be just fine.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I might just mention that we have loaded onto OLIS the complete appendix now, so all the material should be there for you to look at, and also some responses from questions that were posed yesterday are posted under yesterday's hearing date.
Thank you.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. Good afternoon. So if it's acceptable, I will pick up where we left off on performance measures and continue to move through them.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. So I think we had finished with performance measure number 10, which was related to the CAFO program, and we were moving on to performance measure number 11. Which relates to the agency's smoke management program. Some of you may know, I think Senator Gerard, you would know, we still burn a few acres of grass seed fields in the Willamette Valley. This performance measure relates directly to that program. So I need, Lauren, can you pop one? Can you move it?
No. It's down arrow.
Oh, okay, there, somebody's driving for me. As you'll note, we actually exceeded our target in 2016. One of the challenges I think that we have with this measure is we've added additional nephelometers in Mill City and Lyons. And when we're sending smoke up and out of the valley, it's supposed to go up through there and out. And so we're likely capturing that more than what we had previously.
Yes.
The question I have, I'm glad to hear that you did better in 2016, but up until then, I think that you really kind of struggled to meet the KPMs. This is one of those, I think, the eyes in the beholder, and I'm really kind of struggling with the values that have been put onto that, because I think everyone knows we've eliminated probably 90% of fuel burning, and the only place that is burning is fescue, some, I don't know which type, but a fescue field. So I'm kind of struggling with the KPMs, and I just wonder if you have a comment about that.
So the places where we're burning grass seed fields still are basically in the Silverton Hills. They're steep terrains or varieties that need thermal sanitization. You are correct. It is a much smaller number than what we were burning previously. I think from 14, actually 13 on, captures the new lower acreage. It's so dependent on weather and getting the right days and the right time and everything else, and having nothing come in and that's unexpected. This is a very challenging program. One, not to impact people. And last year was another year where we had a lot of challenges in terms of weather and just getting adequate burn days. Okay, moving on. KPM number 12 relates to our ag water quality program. When you hear the Department of Environmental Quality's performance measures, they have a performance measure that pairs up with this. Our performance measure focuses specifically on areas that are predominantly agriculture and what's happening with the water trends. So the first graph is the percent of monitored streams associated with predominantly ag use where with significantly increasing trends, so getting better. We did not meet our target there, and we did not have any additional increasing trends there. In terms of the second measure, it's those that have a predominant water quality that is good to excellent. And we need to look at the 15 data. We don't have 16 yet. I'm sorry. So the 15 data, if, again, We didn't meet our target. In 16, we trended up a little bit in terms of those that are in the good to excellent. And then the final graph looks at those where they have decreasing water quality standards. And we are not meeting our target there either. And then our final KPM is one, I think, that goes throughout state government, and you hear from all the agencies. It's related to customer service. And we do a customer service survey annually. We try and move that around in terms of the time of the year in which we do it to capture the different set of people that we're working with. We've seen some decreases in terms of customer satisfaction with our work in 2016 from what we had in 2014. 2015 was a year that we did not get that survey accomplished. We worked to try and improve how we were doing it. We also recognize that given the timing of the survey, it was early in 2016, just post picking up a lot of new customers in the new hemp program and some other places where we were working through a lot of new issues. The other area I think that we are putting some focus on is in terms of data availability, and we've been trying to find additional ways to put information out on the web and use social media to get information out to people. So that would conclude the key performance measures for the agency.
Question, yes.
The question I have is, how much time do you spend preparing for the KPMs and reviewing the KPMs and spend with LFO going over the KPMs, furnishing the data? I'm just kind of curious as to the, if you could give me just kind of a bare bones sort of, how much is this costing the agency to do that?
Co-chairs, Senator Drodd, the bulk of the time around the KPMs is in that summer to fall. They're due at the end of September. It's a chunk of time because they aren't, some of them are not necessarily easy data to gather, like the ones that we talked around with economic development. Others are easy because we can pull it directly from data that we have. Over time, it's become easier. I think the system has improved a little bit. So I can't give you a good sense in terms of hours, but there are some of them that are clearly much easier to pull the data together than others.
Okay. Thank you.
Where are we going? Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Next, we will move on to accomplishments and improvements through the last biennium. We completed the second largest Asian gypsy moth eradication in the Portland area. Our regulatory lab reached the ISO accreditation. Our metrology lab reached what is essentially, I'm told, is an A-plus rating, and we expanded our customer service outreach features in part. Yes, I'm sorry, I should have introduced myself.
Thank
for the
you,
record.
If you
I'm
would.
Sorry, co-chairs. I just jumped right in. I'm Alexis Taylor. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Thank you.
I apologize for that. And then, as I mentioned, Deputy Director Hansen mentioned yesterday, we did some additional work and outreach in part due to some additional resources we received in reaching out to new consumer base and customer base around pesticides. Have a 24-hour reporting hotline and a citizen advocate for them.
Lauren Henderson, I'm the Assistant Director with the Department of Ag. We wanted to talk as a follow-up to yesterday's conversation on cannabis, and I won't spend a lot of time on this slide. I wanted to point your attention to the infograph, the picture there. That was created by our information staff along with our policy coordinator for cannabis as a way to very quickly work with those in the cannabis industry to at least provide some quick look at some of the things they needed to think about as they work through their business. And for us, it was the food safety issues, pesticides, water quality, some services that we offer as on a voluntary fee-for-service, pest identification. We've had folks bring those into our laboratories and say, what is this? And then, of course, our weights and measures. I think we're still working through the growing pains of both that industry and our hemp growers. I think you'll hear more about some changes to the hemp laws that we have in our state. I think that's just an ongoing process until it gets more refined so that we can work through the issues. I think the latest issues that we have is still around testing for them. I think it's also around things like where do they get their seeds? That's still an issue. And then along with that, what happens to the CBD part that folks are wanting to grow? In Oregon, I think everybody originally thought it was fiber, rope, seed, and those kinds of things, and it turned out to be it was just the opposite of that, that folks were really wanting to produce the cannabinoids and move those in just like in the medicinal market. And so DOJ, Department of Justice, and I know the Measure 91 Committee, and I know Representative Wilson and others are working towards what all that means, and we're working through that and trying to provide the information that we think. I'll just stop there and just say we went from 13 growers the first year, I think, to over 70 or 80. The next year, I would anticipate that number will either stay about the same or we could get more. So that's encouraging. I think the industry is trying to grow. And then the last two points are just to assure you that we're working very closely with our agency partners. We have to. It is a weekly thing for us, and so that will continue. Our policy coordinator, her main job is to be visible and to be out and be a representative of our agency so that if folks have questions, that Sunny, it's Sunny Jones, she is the entry point for them, and she's on the phone all day talking to those businesses. And then lastly, a year or two ago, we took the initiative to share our concerns and issues and questions with our other states that had also passed cannabis laws, Colorado being the first, Washington, and now we're adding California. I think we're up to 5, 6, or 7 states. That has been very helpful as we work through the issues to share each of others' experiences and go through that, and that, I think, will continue.
Yes.
A quick question. Do you differentiate between recreational and medical marijuana at all, or does it all come under one pot?
We don't.
Sorry about the pun.
Did you really do that?
Our cowboy.
Chair Frederick and Senator Girard. We don't. We follow what OHA and OLCC are sending to us through their processes. I think on the food safety side, I'm going to make a guess here that most of those are on the recreational side for the edibles. And so we're doing that. All of those other things, if you're a grower, you still have to meet all of those things. Weights and measures does not distinguish if you're selling by weight. It's that.
Okay.
And if I could, Senator Girard, I did ask and look at your question about labeling yesterday. I was part right. There is labeling. There are warnings for children to make sure you keep it out of the children. They're adults only, 21, but not in the sense that you were talking about that. There is a warning label on some of the products that says it's not been sanctioned by FDA or any other body like that. And so.
Okay. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
We continuing on our accomplishments and improvements, we added 6 new strategic implementation areas under our Ag Water Quality Program, which Deputy Director Hansen talked about yesterday. This is a priority. It's going to continue to be a priority for the department. We are also continuing to focus on the Specialty Crop Black Grant Program. This is bringing a lot of new opportunities for fruit and vegetable growers in the state, and we are going to continue to put an emphasis on that program in those local markets. We have just been approved by USDA to conduct organic livestock certification, so we will start that. And as mentioned yesterday, we developed an avian influenza education initiative around the December 2015 high path outbreaks that we had. ODA also received the State Controller's Gold Star certificates. Really, this is about the back house financials, that we are timely, we are accurate, we have complete financial information. We've actually received that 21 years in a row, so we're quite proud of that. We have enhanced our online renewal system. As I've said several times, ODA has about 95 license types, registrations and permits. We have two major renewal periods, December and June, and basically now all licenses are available to renew online during those windows. In the June window, just as an example, in June 2014, 14% were done online. Last June in June 2016, 91% were done online. So it's really being taken advantage of. This has had some streamlining for businesses. They now can do it after hours, and they don't have to worry about doing it during their business hours, which are also ODA's business hours. And so there's been some efficiencies there, I think, for ease of doing business for the companies we work with. And as was said, we are going to continue to look for new and creative ways to connect to the consumer base out there via social media, Facebook, Twitter, and then just posting more easily understood information online. Next, we'll move into some challenges. Coexistence and I think complexity are really the two takeaways from this slide. Whether it's production types, the urban versus rural under the coexistence bucket, I think that is a challenge. It's going to continue to be a challenge for everything, much of what ODA touches. On complexity, I think the issues we're dealing with are more and more complex. Hemp is a great example. As we're working through laws and regulations around hemp, it's incurring more legal costs. We're having to do more consultations with the Department of Justice. So I think our issues are becoming more complex, and that is going to continue to be a challenge for us. And then there are going to be, you know, the core program work, and we've listed a couple of costs that are born out of that core program work. These are around the invasive species, around Japanese beetle, light brown apple moth, which are two that we are hoping to take eradication efforts this year. Yes, Senator.
Thank you. I should have asked this earlier, and I'm not sure I'm in the right slide here, but yesterday you talked about the biological control program. As you probably are aware, the governor eliminated that program. I'm giving you a softball question. Why should we keep it, and what's going to be the effect if that gets eliminated?
Co-chairs, Senator Girard, I think the biological control program, much like many of our marketing programs, are a long-term investment. It takes a lot of time and research to develop these biologicals, and so it's an ongoing process. It's important in terms to agriculture where we can use them. It reduces the use of pesticides in some places, by having natural controls that are out there. But it really is one of those programs that it's a long-term, ongoing investment in science.
Thank you.
Oh, would you please identify yourself there too, because go ahead.
Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director.
Thank you.
Continuing on with the challenges, we really are working as the diversity of Oregon changes, crop changes, new production practices, those types of things come in, you know, balancing the core work that we do at the department with some of those new demands. And we listed cannabis as one of those that will continue to be, I think, balancing those an ongoing challenge. Next, also public records requests, I think, will be an ongoing challenge. I don't want to be misconstrued that, you know, we think transparency and the public has a right to know is very important. But as our work is more complex, the public records requests that we are receiving are also more complex. So it takes more time, more staff resources away from their day-to-day jobs in order to meet them. So we think it's important, but it is just going to be an ongoing challenge we will have at the agency. Staff training, less staff to do more work. while also making sure they have some basic training, whether that's around workplace safety, non-discrimination, diversity in the workplace, information security, those types of things. So doing more with less resources while making sure they have some of those basic training, I think will continue to be a challenge. On IT resources, yesterday we showed that map with where our staff is located. So a lot of our staff are working all across the state and making sure that they have the right types of IT resources to do their jobs is really important. The latest technology to be able to communicate back to us in Salem and with their counterparts and the businesses they're serving. So that will continue to be an ongoing challenge as technology evolves. On the laboratory side of things, you know, right now our labs are often commingled in or near office space, and there are different requirements needed. Laboratories have different venting systems than an office space requirement. So the location of some of theirs in the buildings that we have is going to be a challenge and has been a challenge and will continue to be a challenge for us. On the succession planning, I think ODA faces similar challenges that a lot of state government does with people who could retire at any day or in the next few years could retire. That's a lot of institutional knowledge they're walking out the door with when they decide to do that. And so really making sure we have opportunities for our young staff, new staff, to be trained, to gain that knowledge resource base, and really have some solid succession planning is a challenge and one that we're focusing on. So where are we going? And really, what does ODA look like today, and what do we want it to look like, you know, by 2020? As was mentioned, we're in the middle of working on our strategic plan. The last was done about 14 years ago. We have reached out to various agricultural industry. It's been a priority for the State Board of Agriculture. We hope to have this finalized by this fall. And in the next slide, I'll talk about what the kind of six key objectives are in draft form. There is an ODA strategic plan process summary in the packet of materials that I think was uploaded online if you want to see kind of the summary of the process that we did undertake at ODA. So here are draft key objectives. They, you know, really operate around we want to continue to be that role model organization and have that culture of compliance. We don't base success on the number of civil penalties we issue. We base success on being able to work with our stakeholders, with farmers and ranchers, to comply with the laws and regulations. We want to embrace a culture of collaboration, whether that's with other natural resource agencies we work with or with our stakeholders and partners that we are dependent on implementing a lot of our programs, like soil and water conservation districts. We want to foster employee excellence. That's, again, giving new up-and-coming employees and leaders in our department the ability to continue to grow into the people who will take our jobs when we're gone. We want to strive for clear and concise and inclusive communication. We talk a lot about this. I think it's really important on not just talking about to the people we work with every day, but everyone in Oregon on what we do and why we do it and how we touch their lives, because we touch their lives in a lot of ways that you know, people in the metro areas don't see every day. And then we want to continue to support the diversity of Oregon agriculture. I think this is extremely important. It's one of our strengths, but it's also one of our challenges, and again, this centers around that coexistence. So what are our top issues going into this biennium? Coexistence is number one. You see it as a running theme probably through everything we do these past 2 days at ODA, and it will continue to be, whether it's around the types of production systems, whether organic, traditional, biotech, or whether it's the urban-rural coexistence issues when you have urban populations growing around farms or people from urban areas moving to rural areas. And, you know, farming can be loud, it can be smelly, it can be, you know, tractors during harvest on the roadways, which slows traffic down, and some of those tensions that naturally come. Cannabis, whether it's marijuana or hemp, I think will continue to be a challenge by a lot of the areas that Assistant Director Henderson laid out. The Food Safety Modernization Act, There are a whole host of new rules coming down the pipe to implement, and that will continue to be a challenge around also with questions around funding. The invasive species eradication efforts, we've got a five-year project proposed under the for Japanese beetle, and then a one-year project with two applications for the light brown apple moth. And, you know, having funding to be able to carry out that work is going to be a top issue for us in really being able to eradicate those invasive pests. And then extreme weather events. 2 years ago, Oregon's had a drought. It's hard to believe with the winter we've are having so far. But then just, you know, a few this past month, with the ongoing winter storms that we've seen out in eastern Oregon and the devastation that that's had on our onion growers out there, I think, you know, those extreme weather events are going to continue and certainly issues we are going to be dealing with over the next 2 years.
So a couple more issues related to the areas where I do much of my work. This is Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. Ongoing implementation of our strategic initiative. Being able to continue to add those areas and do the analysis and the work and have the resources to have the watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts there to help landowners meet the needs of the Ag Water Quality Program. Maintaining tools for farmers and ranchers. I think Co-Chair Witt knows lots about this. We've had lots of conversation around balancing the needs of pesticide users with those health concerns and the concerns of other public, but assuring that there are adequate tools to deal with those agronomic issues that are out there. We have been involved in work that's at the national level, but also here at the state around pollinator protection. Working with OSU to protect pollinators. And Lauren, I think you're going to talk about the lab information system.
Yeah. Lauren Henderson, Assistant Director with the Department of Ag. We, for this biennium, we received funding to implement a lab information management system. The system that we have today is a couple of decades old, and as you can imagine, does not meet the needs of today. So we've taken our time with that system. It's taken us a little bit longer to get that system online. The primary reason is we were faced with, do we reinvent the wheel ourselves and buy maybe something and customize it for our four labs? Or can we take our time and work with other providers who have already done that to see if they can provide something that would get us 70 to 80% there, and then work on the customization of that. I think that's where we'll go in the RFP process, and we're doing those evaluations today. And ultimately, that system may not be hosted by us. It may be on another platform somewhere else where our staff can get into that. But that's a critical system, and the reason why is it's a way for us to track our laboratory results so that our programs can see those results as fast as they come off of the very expensive pieces of equipment that we're buying today that can actually hook up to that system. And when those results are reported out, they go right into the system. It's gonna pay itself back over and over again, I believe, once we get it up and running. The agency succession planning, Director Taylor's already talked about that. I will just tell you, I was counting the other day and I found 35 of our senior staff who could probably walk out the door tomorrow. And many of them are in places where we're only one deep. For knowledge. So that we have our task ahead of us. I don't think that's going to go away. I don't think we're unique in state government. I think all agencies are dealing with that. And then the IT investments for greater efficiencies. I'll use an example. We mentioned the Secretary of State's office, our audit in our food safety program. We had initiated a kind of a pay-as-you-go project to get those staff and their inspection work on iPads, and we did that. I can tell you that audit would not have turned out very well had we not already done that. What the audit said is to use the data that you already have on your iPads and figure out a way to use it better than you have, but at least we had the data. We wouldn't have been able to say that 2 or 3 years ago. Our staff no longer need to carry big computers and filing cabinets in their cars and all kinds of other things. They can do it all off an iPad, get an electronic signature, and email those inspection reports right to those businesses right there. So that's an example of that. Continuing on, I think it's important that we continue to try to maintain our delivery of our current service levels. Current service levels denotes in state speak as a financial term for current service level. It's that, but it's also in my mind, and I'll use the laboratory as an example. We have to continue to work towards finding ways to maintain our turnaround time because many of our programs rely on that turnaround time. When we get emergencies and things we're not expecting, our service levels drop. If the funding's not there to do that, then we lag. And we have a lot of folks depending on those results in our lab. I think you can put that out into any program that we have. And yes, it is resource dependent. I think what Deputy Director Hansen mentioned about the biocontrol is it's a long-term investment and not something that you can pick up today and drop tomorrow. You have to stick with it in order to get the results you have. And so that's really, I think, what that pull-up point is talking about. We mentioned completing the strategic plan. That's really important for us to do and get done so that we can start implementing the strategic plan and the operational plans that go with that. Ensuring effective engagement and outreach to ODA customers and Oregonians. I think we're working hard to find through social media and the technology of today to make sure that we're reaching everyone, not just our traditional customers. All Oregonians care about their food. All Oregonians care about Oregon. And so we work hard to make sure that we're reaching all of those folks either through our advisory groups or the work that every one of our programs does. And I can just tell you, we put together a food safety advisory group that's got 20, 25, 30 people on it that represent, I believe, every facet of food in Oregon, including farmers markets and the people that enjoy those. The other thing, the other bullet, the changing expectation of program services for public good. Environmental justice and those kinds of issues to making sure that our programs like water quality and those things are meeting the needs of everyone and the expectations of everyone and the changing expectations of everyone. I think that's challenged our agency and we're going to continue to work on that and it will be an issue for us to pay attention to always.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director. If I might add, ensuring effective engagement, that's across agriculture as well. I mean, Oregon has a variety of SIFES type styles in terms of agriculture, and we really have a big tent theory. We love them all. And how do we support all of them and meet the needs? And with that, the new customer base that we're bringing in through cannabis and bringing them into a new fold of regulation that they haven't had before and becoming comfortable with working with us like many of our core customers have. And so that's just it's an ongoing process of building relationships and working through issues together.
Thank you for that, Lisa. And then the last bullet that I hope you would have an expectation of us is to continue a culture of ongoing improvement. We're not afraid of change. We're not afraid to improve. I think from the top of our agency to the bottom of our agency, if there is a bottom, everything we do and the people that work for us is important, and we encourage folks to bring their ideas to us as an agency and really are not afraid to meet with anyone about ways that our agency can provide our services better. I think hopefully you've got the feel of that with the Secretary of State's audit. We did not run away from that. We embraced it, and we'll continue to do that as we move forward to make those changes.
Now, some of our plans to improve program delivery, you know, as Lauren just mentioned, the Secretary of State audit, we are working on a strategic plan to address those recommendations, and we'll work to implement some of the what the Secretary of State audit found on the food safety program. On the ongoing laboratory infrastructure improvements, you know, lab equipment has a certain life cycle. It will come to its end. So replacing those pieces of equipment in a timely manner is something that we are driving towards to improve, to make sure our labs can continue to offer that level of service that our customers are expecting and used to. We continue to try and make improvements to our online payment system, that license system, that renewal system, based upon customer feedback. And that's, you know, one of those areas we've really tried to be that kind of nimble organization as we get feedback from our customers to adapt to what they want to see to make sure it actually works for them. And we're continuing to try and leverage our IT investments for better efficiency. I think one of the ways we're doing that is we made this online payment system. Initially, it was just going to be for renewing and for paying your licenses, but it's been expanded throughout the year to do other things like managing products, like vet products, feed products, those types of things. And it also now includes renewals for animal brand registrations as well. And we're hoping, or we're planning to roll out soon an option to pay for invoices as well. So really that one-stop shop where everyone can come to us. So something we've built, something we've invested in, and now we can expand to other parts of the agency as well. And then one other, the very last bullet is about new strategies on how we engage with our stakeholders. And, you know, the picture there, I think, you know, a picture says 1,000 words, and it's really about, this is some outreach we're doing in Northwest Portland around Japanese beetle. And as in years past, we may have done more technical documents, and we're really trying to just highlight, hey, do you have roses? Do you care about your roses? This is why you should care about what we're doing with the Japanese beetle eradication, and then bring them into a town hall meeting where we can build that community support. So trying to leverage different types of ways to reach the public.
Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director. For the 2017 session, we actually have a relatively short list legislative concepts. And if you would like me to, I can run through them briefly, or we can just move on past and kind of keep going into budget.
Yes. You have a question?
No, she asked a question.
Oh, I did.
I would like you to go into a little bit of detail.
Okay.
Yes, that would be good.
Happy to do that.
Please, that would be very helpful.
Yep. House Bill 2554. This is a simple bill that allows for an exemption to the state labeling laws to meet the export requirements of our markets. I think we heard that in House Ag earlier, and it's moved out of committee already. House Bill 2255. Amends Oregon law to bring it into compliance with the federal pasteurized milk ordinance. It's one of those alignment issues. That one as well has moved out of House Ag and moved on. We talked with House Ag about House Bill 2256. This is a bill related to allowing Oregon to consider dietary supplements in the definition of food to assure that they're regulated in compliance with how FDA looks at them. Basically, this came about as an issue with an enforcement case, and we recognized we didn't have strong standing in that area. That bill's scheduled for House Ag, I believe, on Thursday of this week. Senate Bill 18 relates to the Food Safety Modernization Act. You've heard it weaved throughout our presentation, and this is to really have a policy discussion and talk about what that means and to provide the agency specific authority for the implementation of that program. And Senate Bill 19 is a housekeeping bill that realigns some of the language in our motor fuel quality and the language around biofuels. And that's initially has been heard in Senate Environment.
Subcommittee members, you have heard the review of the agency's key bills this session. Are there any questions or comments on those? Not seeing anything. Thank you very much for that review. And budget now. Please proceed.
Once again, Lauren Henderson, the Assistant Director with the Department of Ag. So I'm going to try to go over this at a very high level, and then I'm very anxious to answer any questions that you might have as we go along. But I just wanted to point out our agency does have the four different fund types: general fund, lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds. We don't have general fund or lottery fund in every one of our programs. It's in about half of our programs, half of the 35 for general fund. And then lottery funds, I think, is only in five of our programs that make up, and those are in the natural resource policy area. One thing I'll point out to you that's pretty obvious is the $68 million that's in the governor's budget for other funds is the predominant part of our agency funding. It's 59%. Our agency relies on those license fees and our fee-for-service programs for the bulk of what we do. That being said, the general fund, in some of the places where we have it, like our lab, are vitally important to supporting all of our agency programs going forward. You see the staffing numbers there, and I can explain those if you'd like in the jump. For the most part, the change from 13-15 to 15-17 was in our other funded programs. We received six, along with House Bill 3549 in our pesticide program. Those were four investigators, a case reviewer, and then our customer service. And then we received 10 other funded positions in our shipping point program. That really was taking existing limitation that we had and moving it into positions, and so that was 16 of the 25. The others were spread out across our programs in various places, but primarily in the other funded areas. Our policy packages rely very heavily on our other funds and federal funds. We only have one that has any general fund in it. That is package 260. Package 260 is taking two half-time positions and making it into one full-time vet. It's difficult to hire two half-time vets. It's hard enough to compete to get a full-time vet out of the private practice. So we're just taking that, cleaning up some things that we did in the last session to try to get one fully funded position there. I wasn't going to go through each one of them with you, but I'll just summarize them. The packages that are labeled as 100-something are in our administration policy area. Those two beef up the resources that we have in our human resources shop. We only have two for 370-some FTE. That's stretching it. The average is one to about 75 employees. We have one to 150, and so we're asking for one there primarily to help us with our training. The technology investments we talked about, those packages that are labeled with two-something are in our food safety and animal health program. We have one package in our natural resource area. That is the plant program position modifications. That's changing the types of those positions. And then the packages that are labeled four are in our market access program. I will just mention, because it's been asked of me before, package 450 is the work we do in our Commodity Commission Oversight Program. That by itself does not raise the fees that the commodity commissions are paying. What's happened is it provides limitation for that program because it's borrowing limitation from another program, and so we'd like to have it have its own a limitation, and there's already the dollars to help pay for that. Senate Bill 5503 is our fee bill. We only have one fee to ratify this session, and then I'll mention one that came kind of at the last, which was package 370, our nursery license fee. We work very closely with the nursery industry on a fee increase for this program to keep it solvent and to be able to meet the demands of that program. That was done in May of 2016, and so that is what the fee bill is about today. Along with that, we, in our hemp program, we had mentioned very briefly that it's having a hard time being solvent. In other words, the cost for the Department of Justice and some other things are causing us to go in the hole, and it is in the hole. And we initiated a temporary rulemaking in January of this year to raise those fees and have done that. And so I'm not sure if that needs to be amended into the fee bill or not, but I wanted to mention that, and I'll rely on Mr. Siebert for that.
Mr. Chair, members, I just might explain a little bit about the process, too. The fee bill he's referring to is really a fee ratification bill. The legislature requires state agencies to come back and seek a retroactive approval of fees that they changed during the interim when those fees were not anticipated in their legislatively adopted or approved budget.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have, and I need to back you up to one of the bills in your priorities, the FSMA bill. It's become aware to me that that requires some federal backing. Do we have the money? What's that going to cost, and what are we going to get out of it, I guess is a better way to put it.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. So the Food Safety Modernization Act is really the first major overhaul of the food safety regulations at the federal level in many, many, many years. It has several rules that FDA has been working on over probably the last, I believe, 5 years-ish to get them in place. They're still not complete. They're going back to revisit some of them. This is an issue where many of the states, working through the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, have sent the signal to FDA that federal funds should help to help to fund this. That said, it reaches far and wide and deeper into the food system than what we have seen previously. You can think of it as a farm-to-fork program. And so it will have more inspections on farm, especially small produce farms. I would say I would not guesstimate today what the cost of the program is going to be, but it will be a significant change from what we're doing today. As we've looked at it at ODA, we've tried to think of it as a cross-functional program with some of the work done in our food safety program, as well as some of the work done in our commodity inspection shipping point program, where they're familiar with working on the farm with the fruit and vegetable and doing the certification programs.
Now we'll move into the reductions that are in our governor's budget. You see the list there. I will just tell you that this is one of the hardest things that we have to do in our agency, and I'm sure we're not alone there. You have a tough job ahead of you. We did come up with a list. We do have a prioritized list of programs. Our programs are ranked 1 through 35. We've had that list for quite some time and have used that in everything we do when we talk about building our budget. We consulted that list again. We brought in stakeholders and talked through what that list, this list might look like, and ultimately this is the list that was produced. We don't have dollar amounts there, and I can tell you what each one is if you would like. But as you can see, the PARC program, the CAFO program,
you okay?
Yeah.
The food safety program, rely on our other funded programs to pick up those costs. We've looked at the cash balances of them. The food safety one is the largest. It's $538,000 to move from general fund to other funds. The cash balance, there is a significant cash balance in that program. That's a doable shift. And we've talked to the industry and the stakeholders about that shift. I can tell you that anything, they're all listed as one time, and they're listed as one time because, and this is my analogy, it takes, seems like forever to build those balances up, and they go away very quickly. The food safety shift, I'll just highlight that because one of the audit recommendations was that we pull back on the work that we're doing on the federal side. That means we won't be receiving those federal funds. And the staffing that we employ from federal work to the state work to help us get caught back up will put a bigger burden on that cash balance. I can tell you we're not anticipating needing any fees in either the PARC program, which relies on the pesticide fees, or food safety for this next biennium. We think the cash balances, and we've managed those to a point that we can do that. I'll stop there in case there's any questions.
Senator Gerard, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is on predator control. I just met with Farm Bureau last week, and this was probably one of the tops on their list, especially for cattlemen. Could you just kind of explain what you're doing away with and why they're so excited and maybe why we want to look at funding this?
The predator control program, and I should mention that the reduction there is $464,299. That's how much the program is. There is a like reduction in the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and when they get here, they will talk to you about that too. The the Wildlife Services Program, and I know Mr. Williams is in the room who runs that program, and he can certainly talk to you about the ins and outs of that program. But generally, that program is a combination of state dollars, federal dollars, county dollars, and in some cases, landowner dollars. Ultimately, like many of our programs, the removal of those dollars make it harder for landowners to deal with the predators that are attacking their livestock and so forth, coyotes and things. I can tell you, it's a tough thing to put on the list, but our agency, and when I started saying that we don't have very many programs that are on general fund, we get very quickly into programs that do the same thing, which affect landowners. The weed program would be next.
Oh, that's number two.
Yeah, and so it's very, very difficult, and I failed to mention when I started, because they're on the list does not mean that our agency does not care about those programs. We think all our programs are important, as you can imagine. And so the impact of the predator control is it will have a direct impact to the counties because they may have to make up those difference. It could have an impact that the services just won't be there. And if a landowner has a particular issue, they may have to come up with those dollars right out of their pocket themselves in order to take care of those. I mean, so that's the direct impact.
Yes.
Can you put your mic there down? There.
Those two are very, very important, not only to the agricultural community, but Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and anyone that has anything to do with the outdoors. That's a very important program, both those programs, and I'd hate to see them go away.
Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lauren, I'm very sympathetic with folks that have to make budget cuts. Nobody likes to have to do it. But I'm wondering if you could tell us first, with the removal of the weed program's biocontrol position, is that the loss of a person, or is that a loss of the person and, in essence, the program, or the loss of biocontrols of weeds?
Co-Chair Witt, that's a great question. So it would be the loss of an FTE. The position is currently vacant today due to a retirement, and we thought ahead a little bit when we saw that we would not be removing a position or laying off a position. I can tell you in the weed program, that is one of those programs that is one person. We do have a similar type position in our invasive pest program, the IPPM program. It would be hard, I think, for that one person to do both, but we certainly may have to look at that. But I think for the most part, you could say if that reduction stays there, the department has lost its biocontrol program.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lauren, I know it's very difficult to be able to describe something that never happens, but can you possibly describe for us what the loss of the predator control in the weed programs might look like in terms of our state's ability to control pests that, my words, my editorial, at times feel like they're out of control?
Co-Chair Witt, I think any time you lose an entire program, you lose the years of investment that have gone into making that program the program that it is, and to rebuild those take years if you want to bring them back. I think that's my short answer to that. I think, you know, the state has invested in, if you remember, one of the bullet points was maintaining current service levels. Those are some of the things that we talk about when you make investments to try to keep those investments. The biocontrol one is certainly that. The state funding, as I'd mentioned before, for predator control is one part of an overall funding mix in a cooperative program. And so we would really have to, I think, ask USDA Wildlife Services what the direct impact of no state dollars into that program that has federal funding and county funding and other funding that go into that mix.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your very candid answer, and I know that it is not easy for any of you at the department to contemplate having to cut these programs, and to the extent that we may be able to assist in finding ways to continue that programs, if there's anything that we can do, sign me up.
Co-Chair Witt, I appreciate that sentiment. The cut in the GRB is about 9% for our agency. We do support the governor's budget. I wanted you to know, to hear from us, this was not something we did lightly. We thought through it and rethought through it and thought through it again. And this is the reductions that were ultimately put into the governor's budget.
Yes,
Representative Thank you, Mr. Bessemer. Chair. It's 400 and some thousand, and how much is the weed program? How much was that again?
250.
Did you say it?
Yeah, no.
Monetary?
Co-Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, I did not say that. The weed program is $250,759. That's the value of that one position.
One person, we're spending 200 and what
was
it?
2 years.
Oh, 2 years for a biennium. Got it. Now, my next question is on the individual you talked about that may be able to do both jobs. Is that possible or probable?
We don't. Okay. So right now it's impossible because we don't have the other person yet. It is on a blueprint that we've talked about merging programs together. I think we'd have to, that's a long term. That is not something we could do today.
So how long, follow up?
Go ahead.
So how long have we been without both people?
Eric retired in the June last year.
So
the other position has not been filled.
Yeah, okay. So Co-Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, the person that was in the biocontrol position retired in June, and the other person in the invasive program hasn't been hired yet.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
What's your ending balance?
Co-Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, in which particular program?
This biennium.
As an agency? Oh, I'll have to look at that.
You have it or don't you need to bring it back?
I can bring it back. I have it.
Would it be acceptable for us to bring that back tomorrow? Just in terms of
timing?
That
would be fun. Yes.
Mr. Chair, yes. Go ahead. Would you also put some monetary values on these for us?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Co-Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, yes, we can do that.
Senator Girard.
Yeah, the CAFO program, the fund shift to other funds, which is a fee increase. How much are we talking for fee increases? Because that impacts a lot of dairies, and kind of like to look out for them too.
Co-chairs, Senator Girard, the cost of shifting a CAFO position is a little over $250,000 for the biennium. It's basically a doubling of the current fees that are charged in that CAFO program.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, maybe the department could tell us what bill that's in?
Members of the committee, there is not a mechanism currently. A budget reduction came about after the agency's opportunity to put in legislative concepts, and so we would need to work with the legislative body to find a mechanism to put that fee in place during this process.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? I wanted to ask. I'm curious about whether we have, with the predator control in particular, whether we would be violating promises that had been made to cattlemen and others, whether that might create its own set of issues, because we based a lot of the proposals and other things on those kinds of promises. Is that a legal issue? In other words, are we looking at a lawsuit saying that we were going to do this and now we're going to pull back and not be able to do it?
Co-Chair Witt, Senator Frederick, I'm not aware of any legal issues.
Okay.
I think from the mere standpoint that the program has been funded for a very long time, although at different amounts. If my memory serves me correct, in 2009 there were reductions in both ODF&W and ODA that were pretty impactful. And then those were restored, I think, in the next biennium. I can double check that for you because I don't always trust my memory. But
there are no official agreements made regarding those things.
Co-Chair Witt, Representative Frederick, the only agreements that I know of are the ones that the counties put together to work directly with Wildlife Services for that. But once again, I don't want to speak for the director who's in the room. He really, I'm sure, would be willing to talk to you about the ins and outs of that program.
All right. Thank you. Yes, so, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to work with you to try and find the means to at least partially continue these programs. I recognize, as well as anybody else, that cuts may have to be made in places, and these very fine folks have had to make a decision and choice. But I truly believe that these are programs that the people, the citizens of the state of Oregon, value very highly. And this is something that people look to government for help on.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? No? Do we have more to go here?
Yeah. Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I did find, and I think Representative Esquivel, I did find the beginning balance for 17-19, which is the ending balance for this biennium. It is $24,323,462. Other funds. We were also asked by the Legislative Fiscal Office to produce reductions of up to 15%. The governor's reductions were at around 9. The ones with the asterisks are already in the governor's budget, so we kept those in and were consistent there. We talked about those very briefly, and we will put dollar amounts on those for you. You can see that each 5% is worth $1.3 million in general fund. The new ones are in the ag development area, eliminating an administrative specialist position. That position supports our marketing program. The animal health piece relies on veterinary products. It's a license increase there, a registration increase. We have the ability to do that. The statute has a cap in it. That particular fund shift is worth $150,000 and would raise those veterinary products fee by $25. The food safety is an additional one-time shift to other funds, so that would add to the $538,000 that we just talked about. That shift is $102,000. Food safety is on there again because the dollar amounts cross the percentage points, and so that's why it's split into the first and third. That's an additional shift of $121,000. The lab services, that is a shift from general fund to other funds. I will just point out that is dependent on the other programs having sufficient cash balances to support that shift. That shift is $350,000. The Pesticide Stewardship Partnership Program, that program works to improve water quality affected by pesticide use around Oregon. It also has a component with DEQ. A significant number of dollars go to them and their testing, as well as pesticide collection events. Maybe you've participated in those when they've done those roundups. That shift is $137,000. That shift relies on other funds from the pesticide program. There's an additional fund shift in animal health of $150,000. That would raise the vet products fees up to their maximum of $150. Egg development and marketing, this would be a one-time reduction of a marketing position, an ops and policy position there. That reduction is $224,000. The CAFO program, I think Deputy Director Hansen talked about what would need to happen there. And once again, we do not have a bill in place today to do that shift, but that's an extra one. That would be two staff that would be moved from general fund to other funds. That's an additional $250,000. And then in the administrative area, there is a shift of $72,000 that's unspecified at this point. And we would work to figure that out. The admin piece is, frankly, a place to get us to the total, which is $3.866 million. We also have 15% reductions in our lottery funded areas. The legislative fiscal staff wanted us to also put those together. We did not have any lottery reductions in the governor's budget other than a very small revenue reduction, which I think was around $30,000. It was just to make sure that the revenue transfer we were receiving matched with the available revenue. You see there a reduction again in our weed program. Our weed program has lottery dollars in it. This would eliminate a noxious weed specialist. That reduction in lottery funds would be $250,000. The Ag Water Quality Program, this is a reduction to their compliance and technical assistance. This is primarily a service and supplies reduction. That is $43,613. The Ag Water Quality Program has another $60,000 reduction to lottery funds, and that's part of an evaluation program in the riparian areas. In the second 5%, we have reductions in the Soil and Water District program that we oversee. That's $117,000. And then in our Insect Pest Prevention and Management program, eliminating those four labor positions. Those are positions that we use for projects like the Japanese beetle and those eradication projects. That reduction would be $236,000. And then in the third chunk is a larger reduction of a natural resource specialist in the egg water quality program of $228,174. And then another reduction in our insect pest prevention program of $125,000. The reason why you continue to see the same programs in the lottery is if you remember what I had stated before, we only have five programs that have the lottery funds. So the reductions in any lottery hit the same areas.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, are there any additional questions before we wrap up?
Any additional questions?
I just have a comment. I've been dealing with transportation issues, and we're talking in the billions and hundreds of millions, and all of a sudden we're down to hundreds of thousands and with key programs. And so I would urge the committee to let's see if we can find ways. There are three or four things within that wish list, or not wish list, the cut list, that we if you're in rural Oregon, you just absolutely have to have. That's right. Just the end of the story. And there were promises made, and I do think special animal predator control, weed, CAFO, yeah, I think you can do an increase, but how big that increase is, I mean, that's kind of to be determined. So we're not talking huge chunks of money here in comparison with a lot of other budgets.
Welcome, Senator.
Sorry, I really apologize. You can blame Representative Barker.
Okay, good. I will. I like to blame.
We're done.
I like
no,
to blame.
I'm really sorry. I like to blame.
Well, not completely, because we need to have Kathleen Connolly, if you could come forward and give us a little report from DAS.
Okay.
Okay. Co-Chair Witt and Co-Chair Frederick and members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Conley with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm the Chief Financial Analyst for the Department of Agriculture. And I'm here to give you just a brief overview of the governor's budget for the Department of Agriculture today. And our presentations are set to, should consistently look the same between the agencies. So we're trying to give you the same information. You recall that LFO did an overview of the program area for you during your orientation and showed you big pie charts that talked about what kind of funding went into the natural resource programs, how much each agency got. And this is a step down from that. We're looking at each agency. The governor has a number of priorities in her budget. This agency fits within the Ensuring Oregonians Have Clean Air and Water. As the agency mentioned, one of their primary missions is to protect agriculture, agricultural natural resources. So that includes their water quality program, the CAFO operations, regulation of pesticides, and efforts to prevent and control invasive weeds. The agency's done a great job of talking to you about their emerging issues, and one I would just highlight is the water issue, because not only, the water year looks great this year, it changes from time to time, but the other competing interest for water is that the population of the state is growing, industries are changing, calling on more water, so it's a long-term issue. It's not just an issue of weather changing, but over the long term, agriculture needs to capture, store, and use water more efficiently to meet those ongoing competition. These, again, are their emerging issues, but I think we don't have to work on those. This is a visualization of their expenditure history and takes you right up through the governor's budget. This is the spending side. We'll have a slide later that's on revenue. But as you can see, the agency has been growing over the last couple of biennia in terms of its ability to spend. There have been investments made. In 2015-17, we had investments in the agricultural water quality program, lab infrastructure, positions in the nursery program, and then some of the cost of administrative services removed off other funds onto general funds. But now we're in 2017-19, and we're seeing a pullback in the other direction because of the challenges with general fund. And so you see general fund is actually decreasing in this agency just slightly. Lottery funds are going up just slightly. other funds are taking the brunt of these increases. Again, this is because of the shifts off to other funds that the agency talked with you about and some fee increases. Federal increases are funding is going up, and that's probably a combination of the Food Safety Initiative and some one-time funding also. The problem with a lot of the federal funds is that you can't always count on them. They're not base funding. They're particular projects. So that's one thing to keep in mind. We are seeing an increase, but it can't always be counted on. Okay, this is what the agency spends their money on. As you can see, this agency is really heavy on personal services. 68% of their funds are spent on their personal services. And I would just note that this is their main budget driver, because this is a science-based agency. And so they have highly skilled staff, they have scientists, they have highly technically skilled people, they have data and IT people, they have math people, and it's, that's the trend. That's the trend in agriculture and the regulation of agriculture, is it becomes more and more science-based. And so the cost of them hiring and retaining their staff, I think, is only going to trend upward just because of the skill level needed in this agency. So that's one thing to keep in mind.
SNS is another significant part, the supplies and services, 25%. As the agency mentioned, they have a widely scattered staff, geographically scattered, and with that becomes higher, a little higher than normal costs of travel, because a lot of their staff travel around. They are based in different places, and the IT challenges are great when you have highly scattered people, especially if they're out in rural areas. So capital outlay is pretty small. A lot of that is fleet and lab and IT. Special payments that they make, it's only 5% of their budget, and those go out to counties, soil and conservation districts, watershed councils. I did leave debt service in, but this agency has no debt service in their agency and haven't for some time. This is their revenue, a little longer history of their revenue. Now, revenue is not the same as expenditures. This is money coming in. They don't spend every dime they get, except for general fund. If they don't spend it, they have to revert it. This agency is experienced. You don't see the 07-09, but their general fund went down in 9/11. It went down again in 11-13, and then it has started a slow increase in the next two biennia, but we're seeing a slight decrease this time. That is a challenge budgetarily that this agency, it kind of ebbs and flows. And because it does have fee payers, that's that when in times of difficulty, when we have general fund difficulties, that's what we tend to do, is we tend to pull back on general fund and rely more and more on their other fund. Federal funds has actually been, it's a small part of their budget, but it's been actually increasing pretty dramatically. But again, I think that's the Food Safety Modernization Act, which actually is a $1.4 million package in this budget and has four positions and 3.5 FTE. So that certainly is part of the increase in federal funds. I'm going to take the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about Measure 76 lottery funds. All of the lottery funds in this agency are Measure 76. We did not cut the expenditures for the agencies receiving Measure 76 lottery funds because there was no need. This agency did see a small, this is getting down in the weeds, but when we do our state government service charge reductions, if they're touching that, then we bring it down. But in terms of what they're actually doing with their lottery funds, we gave them the current service level for this budget. And that is because lottery funds are having a slight increase. And so the numbers, of course, are fluid. They change with every revenue forecast. We're having another one tomorrow. By the time LFO finalizes this budget, there'll be yet another one. And so the numbers are not set in stone, but right now we are trying that would be why the governor's budget doesn't contain a lottery fund cut for most of the natural resource agencies, because it's Measure 76 lottery funds. Investments, I think you have had an opportunity to talk with the agency about that, and we can certainly come back with any additional information that you need on those. Again, these are heavily self-funded by the agency. They did ask in their agency request budget for general fund, but we were unable to do that, and the agency has stepped up and is using their other funds resources to carry forward the mission of their agency. Reductions, we've already talked about those. I think just in summary, it was largely achieved through fund shifts. With regard to the CAFO, I would note that the agency at least told us that the fees are right now 90% general fund and 10% fees, so compared to the cost of the program. So I think there was room to do that, although I appreciate the mention that, maybe exactly the right number wasn't hit, but nevertheless, there seemed to be room to do that. We also did statewide adjustments. This is what I was talking about, where we are adjusting DAS's budget, really, or the AG's budget, or some of the other services provided in the state government service charge, and so we just make adjustments in the agency's budget to address that. Agency has already talked to you about Senate Bill 18. Also, Senate Bill 5503, which would increase the fees in the nursery program. Those are linked packages in their budget. The hemp fee ratification does not have a package in their budget and doesn't need one. They don't need limitation for that. That's simply to get the revenue that will support the program. Again, I would mention that fee programs are designed to do cost recovery only. Sometimes they're front-loaded because the agency tends to set fees for 4 or 6 years, but they are a cost recovery mechanism. The agency is not making a profit. So, and then finally, we did want to highlight any changes or any differences between the reductions contained in the governor's budget and the reductions contained in the co-chair's framework. There, they included a position reduction in the water quality program and potential reductions in wolf compensation and grant program, although that seemed to be a somewhat flexible proposal. Those were not contained in the governor's budget. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, that's all.
Panel, do we have any questions? Yes.
Maybe it's just more of a comment, but if you look at all the things that we've put on to business, especially agriculture, you put minimum wage, sick leave, mandatory retirement, and then all of a sudden to say that, you know, we can do these fund shifts and they have to pick up the bill, it's I'm telling you, there's just a lot of problem in rural Oregon right now with the direction that we're going. And that's kind of the message I just think that you need to hear.
Co-Chair Frederick and Senator Girard, thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Chair Frederick, and I apologize again for being so late. I was in another committee. I just was curious how many FTE are for the $80 million for the personal services, how many FTE that is.
Sorry.
If you happen to know, it's okay if you don't.
391.08.
So that's all Department of Agriculture?
All Department of Agriculture.
And what was the number again?
Budget. 391 FTE.
Thank
you. And 538 positions. Because again, the seasonal issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Well, I think we will be back tomorrow. As I recall, we have public testimony as well scheduled, so we should have some interesting comments, I'm sure. And having said that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 5502, 5503, and we will be adjourning this meeting until tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Thank you. At 1 o'clock.